qualified buyers on Honda, America's most trusted brand.
To learn more, visit your local North Country Honda dealer or online at NorthCountryHondaDealers.com.
Based on 2014 Brand Image Awards from Kelley Blue Book, visit KBB.com for more information. See dealer for financing details.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conde. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. We got a nice warm day out there today compared to tomorrow. Deep freeze coming your way, according to forecaster Roger Hill. Thank you for joining us on the program this morning. Just a moment here. We're going to talk about some nuclear power issues. We'll take your phone calls throughout the program. We'd love to hear from you at 244-1777. That's 244-1777. Toll free. You can reach us at these numbers, 877-291-8255. That conveniently spells out at the end there, T-A-L-K, if you ever forget it. And again, our number is 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Coming up on the program tomorrow, I'll be down at the State House in Montpelier. Among the guests that will be joining us on the program will we'll kick off the program tomorrow with the Majority Leader, Sarah Copeland Hanzus. Also, the Governor will join us tomorrow, and we'll also catch up with the Senate Minority Leader, Joe Benning. Again, our number is 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome. Welcome back to the program. Arnie Gunderson, who is with Fairwind Associates in Burlington and an expert on nuclear power issues. Gosh, it seems like it's been forever since we had you on, Arnie. How are you?
I'm just fine, Mark. Yeah, we have this gift that keeps on giving over there in Brattleboro, so I'm sure this won't be the last time either.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny because when I contacted you, the plan was to talk about Fukushima, and then this other story came out. So let's start there with Vermont Yankee and what's going on down there. I would dare say these recent tests that are showing strontium 90 are not news to you.
Yeah, we had, Maggie and I were contracted through the Joint Fiscal Office 5 years ago to write a report about the issues related to the leak. And, you know, Entergy has called this thing the tritium leak forever, and so is the NRC. But unlike all the other plants in the country, Vermont Yankee didn't leak tritium. Vermont Yankee leaked strontium and cesium and cobalt-60 and other things because of where the leak was in the plant. The other plants that have had leaks around the world have not had the kind of leak Vermont Yankee had. So it was detected in the soil 5 years ago that there was strontium, that there was cesium, and other isotopes. So they're like pebbles in a stream. They move with the stream, but they don't move as fast as the stream.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, back in 2010, God, it's hard to believe it's 5 years ago. Back in 2010, we detected tritium at the monitoring wells down at the river. And Maggie and I said all along that the other pebbles in the stream, the strontium and the cesium, would eventually get there too. And that's what happened. This week, the Entergy announced, actually the state announced, that they had detected strontium in the monitoring wells along the river.
Mm-hmm. All right, so how big a deal is this?
I think it's a huge deal, and I think we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. You know, if they've just picked it up, the odds are, just like with the tritium, you know, they picked it up and it got worse and worse and worse. If they just pick this up, one, it's going to continue for years, and two, it's going to go up in value. Right now, it's at half EPA allowable. So it's still within the EPA standards, but it doesn't take but a couple more months before we'll be over the EPA allowables as well. So, but the big deal for Vermonters, though, as long as Entergy owns the site, nobody's drinking that water. They'll make the case that it's not drinking water, so therefore the EPA numbers don't apply. But the big deal for Vermonters is that it's dramatically raised the cost for decommissioning. Now, there's a case down in Connecticut at Connecticut Yankee where they had a unknown strontium leak that hit the groundwater, and it added to the cost of the decommissioning of the plant an extra $1 billion. So, you know, you add that, you throw that around with 700,000 Vermonters, and that means everybody's on the hook for $1,300 a piece. It's a big deal.
Wow. You've described this before on the program, but what is strontium 90 and why is it particularly nasty stuff?
Yes, if you remember back to high school chemistry, that chart that hung on the wall, your bones are made of calcium. And right below that on that periodic table is strontium. So it behaves exactly like calcium. And so when strontium 90 is in drinking water, anything that is made of calcium is going to absorb the strontium, thinking that it's calcium. So, you know, things like the shells on the different kinds of snails that are in the river, of course, will pick it up. But the fish bones will pick it up. And, of course, humans pick it up as well. Now, what makes it nasty is that outside the body, it does nothing. It's a very weak energy source, so it doesn't penetrate your skin. But when it gets under the skin and hooks up next to an organ, like your bone is right next to your bone marrow, it produces leukemia. So it's one of the more carcinogenic elements. So the limit is only 8 picocuries per liter compared to tens of thousands of picocuries per liter for tritium. So it's clearly identified by scientists all over the place that this is a really nasty actor.
And why is it produced? What's it a product of?
When a uranium atom splits 235, it splits into a heavier half and a lighter half. And the heavier half is usually cesium 137, and the lighter half is usually strontium 90. And if you add those two up, you get close to, you know, 90 plus 137 gets you close to the weight of uranium 235. So they're the two pieces of radioactive rubble when you split a uranium atom. And what happened is back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and even in the period of 2000, Vermont Yankee had a pump called the Hogging Pump that was used during startups. And when the fuel was leaking, this is back 2010, even 30 years ago, when the fuel was leaking, the Hogging Pump pulled off these radioactive gases and put them in a tunnel. And the pipe in that tunnel over time broke. So the tunnel became contaminated with cesium and strontium and something called cobalt-60 as well. And it sat in that tunnel until it began to leak in 2007. And that leak was finally detected in 2010. That was the big issue at the last year of the Douglas administration was that huge leak.
Right.
So the leak has been leaking since 2007. The strontium moves through the soil slower than the tritium, but it's moving. And this is an indication now that it's heading toward the river.
Okay, so if this hits the river, I'm sure that the argument from the health department, from Yankee, is going to be that it's insignificant quantity. Is that a fair statement?
You know, you're not drinking. It's not about drinking it in the river. It will be below the EPA limits for drinking it in the river. But it bioaccumulates. And what that means is it's like mercury in tuna. You know, it works its way up the food chain. And when a little critter absorbs it and gets it eaten by a bigger animal that gets eaten by a bigger animal, it bioaccumulates up the food chain. So the I think for, you know, perhaps, you know, for 30 years, we'll probably be sampling the fish in the river, because that's the, you know, one of these top animals, like a catfish, something that lives on the bottom, a bottom dweller, that's going to be eating these calcium-containing either small animals or small vegetables that are on the bottom of the river. And we're likely going to see strontium in their bones for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years.
We're talking with nuclear power expert Arnie Gunderson. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. You argue they should clean this up now.
Yeah, you know, we said this 5 years ago. The report Maggie and I wrote that's on the Joint Fiscal Office site, we recommended that the First, they had had in 2010 extraction wells, and at the end of the Douglas administration, the beginning of the first Shumlin administration, those wells were turned off. And what they were doing, Entergy was pulling water out of the ground, which was preventing that water from heading toward the river. Well, turning off those extraction wells was a mistake, because now it allowed the plume, the radioactive water, to move toward the river as the groundwater pushes it toward the river. So we turned off the extraction wells, and now, you know, the horse is out of the barn. But the barn still has a lot of horses in it. And by that, what I mean is that the building that had the leak, it was called the AOG building, the Advanced Off-Gas Building.
Mm-hmm.
It was built in 1970, and they still call it advanced. But it has a large amount of cesium and strontium under it. And I'm not talking about dismantling the entire nuclear site right now. We clearly can't afford that. But it makes sense that we know the ground is contaminated with cesium and strontium. And that building should be decontaminated and destroyed. We should get down into the ground under the building and remove the strontium before it starts to move. Now, it's pay me now or pay me later, but if we spend the money now, we're likely to save 10 times that in the future, because we wind up paying by the cubic foot. When we dispose this waste, you pay by the cubic foot. So if the strontium is moved and it's suddenly 200-400 feet away from this building, then there's a lot more cubic feet involved in shipping it off-site. So my point is that let's knock that building down right now to prevent the strontium from moving and keep the overall cost of the decommissioning down.
Let's go to the phone. Jamie, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. I wanted to ask Arnie if he'd a question and ask him if he'd explain something. I'm sure both of these substances, the strontium and the cesium, have a nuclear half-life. And maybe Arnie could tell us what the nuclear half-life of those substances is. And for those in the audience that don't understand a nuclear half-life, maybe he could explain what that means.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Sure. That's a great question. They both have about the same half-life, 30 years. And what that means is that, let's say there's a million atoms of this stuff now. Well, 30 years from now, there'll be 500,000 atoms. And then 30 years after that, there won't be nothing. There will be 250,000 atoms. And 30 years after that, there'll be 125,000 atoms. So every 30 years, whatever there was before, it gets cut in half. So the rule of thumb is 10 half-lives and it's all gone. So if we're willing to wait 300 years, 30 times 10, the strontium and the cesium in the soil will have decayed away. But, we want to get the site back as a useful, productive piece of Vermont. And I don't think anybody wants to wait 10 half-lives to allow this stuff to decay.
244-1777, that's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. As everybody, I think, is pretty well aware, the Entergy plant is now no longer operating, and it's supposed to be decommissioned at some point here. There was a story yesterday, Arnie, I don't know what your reaction is to this. An Entergy Corp official said Wednesday, telling the Associated Press, the company is offering no guarantees it will pay to decommission its retired Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant if the job's still not done by the end of a 60-year period.
Yeah, that was frightening but not surprising. Peter Bradford, a Vermonter who used to be on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, wrote in 2003, and then Maggie and I wrote again in 2007, that the NRC allowed these companies to become what's called a limited liability corporation. Before Vermont Yankee was sold, the utilities of the state owned it, and there was a relationship between the ratepayers and the power plant.
Right.
But what's happened now is that when Entergy bought it, they just sell power into the wholesale market, and there's no commitment from any ratepayer to buy it. And so what they formed was this thing called the Limited Liability Corporation, which is designed to protect Entergy in the case Vermont Yankee goes belly up. And they actually have three LLCs. Vermont Yankee is owned by an LLC, which is owned by an LLC, which is owned by an LLC. And finally, Entergy gets the money. So the money can go up through those LLCs, but it never goes down. And what Entergy said yesterday was truly frightening. They said that, you know, we're an LLC. We're going to the corporation will be protected 60 years out. And if you want to sue us, we'll fight it out in court 60 years from now. But we don't believe we'll be on the hook if 60 years out we wind up with any additional costs. And, you know, we've been saying that, Fairance has been saying that for 6 or 7 years now. So It was not surprising to me, but it was the first time that Entergy admitted that they plan to duke it out with the state if there's still a contaminated site 60 years from now.
I'm missing something in this equation here. So they've been trying to push out the decommissioning to the point where the decommissioning fund is healthy. What's magic about this 60-year number?
The 60-year number is in NRC regulations, and it's the NRC calls it SAFSTOR, SAFSTORE, but if you really pronounce it the way your third-grade English teacher told you, it's really SAFSTOR. So this the NRC has allowed utilities to wait 60 years to allow these plants to be decommissioned. So here's Vermont Yankee. It ran 40, but it can stay there for 100 years while the decommissioning fund builds up. What's really happening, there's no basis in science for 60 years. The law is made to protect the utilities and the owners to keep their costs down. You know, if they were a windmill in Vermont, they'd have to put all their decommissioning money up front before they started to turn the blades. But because they're a nuclear power plant, they can wait 100 years, the 40 to operate and the other 60, before they have enough money to decommission the plant to turn it back into a farmer's field. So that 60-year argument, the NRC will say, well, we're doing it to protect the poor workers from radiation. But in fact, when a power plant wants to operate because it's shut down for some sort of a mechanical problem, the NRC doesn't care about the radiation exposure to workers, whereas they use that argument to allow a longer period to decontaminate the plant when it's shut down forever. It's really a subsidy to the nuclear industry.
Mm-hmm. All right. It doesn't sound like there's anything anybody can or is likely to do about this.
Well, you know, I don't think it was well thought out. When the NRC allowed these companies to be spun off as LLCs, there are people like Peter Bradford and a little bit later Maggie and I that talked about how it was it had some long-term dangers. But the NRC never thought it through. And I really think now it's time to get guys like Bernie Senator Sanders and Ed Markey. There's a couple of senators who are very interested in this, and there's still an opportunity to change the regulations. Vermont is only the second merchant plant to be decommissioned, so, and there's 40 others after it. So we have an opportunity as Vermonters to change the law, if not for us, for the 40 other plants that are in this train that are eventually going to have to be decommissioned.
We're talking with Arnie Gunderson. He's with Fairwind Associates, which he runs with his wife, Maggie. They are experts on nuclear power issues. Jim asked a good question here to ask you to put into context here this question about the leak materials. Are we talking about, in terms of risk that we can understand, he says, are we talking about the risk of riding in a car, the risk of being hit by an asteroid, or somewhere in between?
Can you give me the first part of the question?
Yeah, I had a listener who wrote in who wanted to know if you could put into context the danger of these leaked materials that we were talking about earlier, and he's asking whether the risk is more like riding in a car, or the risk of being hit by an asteroid, or somewhere in between. I'm guessing somewhere in between.
Okay, I had a hearing aid problem there. We had a case that Maggie and I worked on down in Florida, where a plant was leaking and into their sewage system, and the sewage was getting spread on farmers' fields, and it was strontium 90 and cesium 137 and things like that. And there's a statistically meaningful cancer cluster of 39 kids that developed a very rare brain cancer, and we were able to trace strontium 90 into their baby teeth. So, you know, is it going to wipe out the town of Vernon? No. But is it a cancerous substance that's now in the river and will be for a long time? Yeah. So there's a meaningful increase in the chance downstream communities will have for these rare cancers over the next 100 years. You know, we shouldn't worry about the grammar school, though, because there's a grammar school right across the street, 1,500 yards away. But the water moves from the school toward the river, so we're pushing this material out into the river. But if we want the site back, if we want to use it for farming and the farmer pumps a well and things like that, at that point, reusing that site for a agricultural purpose, it could be game over. We just won't know until we pop a couple more wells down there and determine if there's still strontium in the water.
Wow. I have to make sure I heard this right. So they spread manure on a field, and that had strontium in it. They grew crops, and those ultimately that showed up in the teeth of children.
Yeah, it's it's LER, Licensee Event Report 82 from 1982-045 is the specifics on the case. The NRC was aware of the leak in 1982. And really didn't do due diligence, but that's another long story, Mark.
Let's go to Callis. Good morning, Cynthia. How are you today?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the show. You touched on it just a few minutes ago. I wanted you to explain the dangers of having a decommissioning nuclear reactor plant right across from the school, and there's also one across the river, and also explain what happened with the radiological health rule several years ago in the somewhat covertly in the Douglas administration. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Cynthia.
Well, thanks. That's a great question. There, and we've been commissioned, Ferrance has been commissioned by the Lintelak Foundation to do a study of the Entergy plan to decommission Vermont Yankee, and we'll have a report out in March. The NRC comment period ends on March 23rd, so we'll be providing a detailed report on this. But the issue of the school is critical. Vermont Yankee's safer shut down than it was running. There's no doubt about that. But there still is the equivalent of 700 nuclear bombs worth of cesium in the fuel pool. Now, it has to stay in the fuel pool for 5 years because it's physically hot. But at the end of 5 years, what happens is it gets put into heavy stainless steel containers. Empty, the containers weigh about 70 tons, and then they put about 30 tons of uranium fuel in it, and then put a lid on it and lower that very carefully down from 120 feet down to the ground. Now, if you remember back in 07 or 08, there was a brake failure on the crane that lifts this heavy thing. So we know as Vermonters that the brakes can fail and you can lose control of a canister. So what we will be proposing, Fairwinds will be proposing in this report to the NRC is you've got to get the fuel out of the fuel pool. It's not safe up there. It's a terrorist target. And it's best on the ground. There's no doubt about it. But the period from the time you start to move it to the time you get it on the ground, I think we should do that in the summer when the school is closed, because it is in the next 5 years, it's the most dangerous time in the plant. It's one of those cases. It's a low but not zero probability of an accident. You know, the brakes can fail, and this 100-ton container can fall. We've had that happen in Vermont where the brakes failed. We have an opportunity, though, to make sure that we don't have kids 1,500 yards away. So one of our recommendations is going to be to do it in the summer when the school's not in session. And that would hold for the, you're right, there's a school over in New Hampshire as well that would also be affected. The other question, Vermont is the only state in the country that had a 25 millirem, that's a measure of radiation, limit at the fence boundary. And when Entergy got the power up rate, they exceeded that 25 millirem number. But what they did was they bought the property along their site boundary, so they moved the site boundary out.
Moved
and
the fence. They moved the fence.
The Department of Health changed the way they calculated the millirem. That was argued back in, I want to say, perhaps 06 or 07, and the department did not change the way it calculated it. But the law was pretty clear, and the department changed its calculations to help Entergy continue with the plan.
Am I remembering this right? Didn't they move the fence back out at one point, too?
Yeah, they bought more farms. All those houses along the road there, they just bought them out, and essentially that allowed them to claim that the dose at the fence line was below the state limit. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back, continue our discussion with Arnie Gunderson with Fairwinds Associates. We're also going to talk about Fukushima, what's the latest there, and we'll be back right after this.
Novello Furniture on the Barry Montpelier Road has the area's largest selection of Lazy Boys for your home. And right now, during the National Lazy Boy President's Day sale, you can save hundreds on your next purchase. Get a famous Lazy Boy recliner in one of three different styles and sizes with your choice of over 30 fabrics for just $399. That's what a recliner cost 20 years ago. Or choose a Lazy Boy Kennedy sofa for just $799. It's possible to upgrade any of these Lazy Boy styles to power and or memory foam cushions. If you've got your heart set on a leather recliner, now is the time to buy. The Lazy Boy Lawson leather recliners are $300 off, now only $699. Buy now and pay no interest if paid in full in 12 months. But hurry, the National Lazy Boy President's Day Sale event ends on February 23rd, only at Novello Furniture on the Barry Montpelier Road. Better furniture for less.
What could be better than Mid-State's annual President's Day sales event? How about President's Day savings every day for the entire month of February? Jeep has just announced special President's Day savings for the entire month of February. And when you combine presidential savings with Ram Truck Month, you have Mid-State's biggest sales event of 2015.
Hi, folks. Mitchell at Mid-State Jeep. You do not want to miss our annual President's Day sales event for the entire month of February. We have great deals like a brand new 2015 Jeep Patriot for only $14,887. That's right, a brand new Jeep for $14,887, and it comes with a 5-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. You want a low payment? This is the way to go. Stop by today and take advantage of our large inventory and rebates that only come once a year during the Jeep President Sales Event, halfway between Barrie and Montpelier, where our team always makes it easy.
At this day, Dodge Hyundai, we make it easy.
Finance Patriot with Chrysler Capital.
Looking to buy a car, motorcycle, or boat? Maybe you'd like to refinance your existing vehicle. Granite Hills Credit Union can help with a great fixed rate of 2.49% for 60 months for a new or used vehicle. We've got money to lend right now at this unbelievable low rate. Not a member of Granite Hills? Not a problem. We are open to anyone who lives or works in Washington or Orange counties. Act now before our loan special is gone. This low rate of 2.49% for a car, motorcycle, or boat won't last forever. And remember, we can help you refinance your existing vehicle too. Apply online at granitehills.org or call today to take advantage of low loan rates from Granite Hills, your hometown credit union.
At Granite Hills Credit Union, the difference is you.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
All right, we're back continuing our discussion. We've been talking this morning with Arnie Gunderson. He's an expert on nuclear power issues, works in Burlington at Fairwinds Associates. He's also helped the legislature look at issues down at Vermont Yankee as well, too. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Before we take any more calls here, I want to just have you flesh out a little bit for us here where things stand with the Fukushima crisis. Gosh, you know, you talk about how you couldn't believe it was 5 years ago, the tritium and other problems at Vermont Yankee. It's hard to believe it's coming up on 4 years with Fukushima, huh?
Yeah, no, it's still out of control. You know, the containments didn't contain. That's really the bottom line for the looking back over 4 years. These supposedly robust nuclear containments were the last line of defense, and everything failed. But that last line of defense should have held, and it didn't. So we've got. It wasn't like we have a China syndrome, which is when the molten fuel melts through the containment. But the temperatures and pressures got so high in the containment, it blew the top off the containment and blew the seals in the sidewalls. And what I mean by that is that wires and pipes go through the side of the containment, and there's a little rubber fitting that the pipes slide through. That was never designed for the pressures and temperatures and radiation that they saw. So all that rubber deteriorated. That's allowing groundwater to leak in to the containment, suck up the radioactive material, and then run right back out. When Fukushima was built 40 years ago, they cut a cliff. And in the process, they changed the groundwater flow. And groundwater has been flowing into Fukushima, Daiichi, into the plants there, to the tune of 400 tons of groundwater every day for 50 years now. So, but it was always clean. You know, there was never a radioactive plant. So they would come in, they would pump it out, and there was no problem. But for the last 4 years, now we've got a contaminated plant. So as the groundwater flows in, it's picking up all the radioactivity from the nuclear fuel and transporting it right into the ocean. They're already seeing above legally acceptable levels strontium and cesium in the bottom-dwelling fish as far away as 20 or 30 miles from the facility. This is significant because, you know, again, other animals will eat those fish and gradually transport it. We also saw lower levels of cesium in tuna that were caught off of California and in salmon that are being caught up in Alaska. Now, those levels are much lower than what the government allows, but already off of Fukushima, as far away as, you know, several tens of miles, we're seeing fish that are above those limits. And they haven't stopped the leak, and so they're essentially, it's bleeding into the ocean and will for tens, if not 100 years. It's a problem that was foreseen back in 2011. I was one of the people that mentioned it, but prominent Japanese did as well. The trick is to prevent the groundwater from coming in. And I think the Japanese are focusing on the wrong side. They're trying to prevent the leaks from going out.
Right.
Almost like, you know, when you got a tub and you've got the water running in the tub, do you build the walls on the tub higher, or do you turn the spigot off?
Right, right. Because they need to turn
the spigot off. They need to prevent the groundwater from coming in.
But my recollection is that's almost like trying to stop a river coming into the plant.
I mean, it is. What I had proposed back in 2011 was to build a trench, it would be 6 feet wide and down to ground, down to bedrock, which would be about 70 or 80 feet deep. And you fill it with a material called zeolite, which is the material it's a volcanic rock. And it's really good at absorbing cesium. And outside of that trench, put in extraction wells that would pump clean water to lower the water table. Mm-hmm. And I was told in 2011 that TEPCO, Tokyo Electric, didn't have the money to spend on it. So now they've come up with a harebrained scheme where instead of a zeolite trench, they're going to build an ice wall. And it's going to be 2 miles long.
Yeah.
They're pumping these, the pipes that they're putting down in the ground, they're going to pump refrigerant into the pipes and try to freeze the earth for 2 miles. It's going to use about $1 million a month in electricity to keep this gigantic refrigerator running.
Jeez.
And the theory is that the ice wall would prevent the groundwater from moving in. It's never been done before, so it's sort of a Hail Mary pass.
Well, I mean, you wonder what would ever happen if they had another earthquake, tsunami, electrical. I mean, how long can the power be out before that starts getting a little like a bad hockey rink?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Let's take a couple of other calls here. Let's go up to Greensboro. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Mark, and good morning, Dr. Gunderson. My grandchildren are going to be eating the tuna that eat the smaller bottom fish. They live in Kamakura, which is south of Tokyo. They've been there for some years. They'll be there for a few years more. Your observation that strontium is drawn to the calcium in their teeth and in their bones scares me to death. It's one thing to think about these things in the abstract. It's another thing to think about them as affecting your grandchildren. So I'm delighted with the report, and on the other hand, I'm angry that TEPCO and the government of Japan hasn't done more to prevent water loaded with radioactive materials from going into the ocean. And right now, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. I know they're throwing water in to cool the reactors. That's got to be coming out with the groundwater as well. So thanks for your observations and education. Is there anything that you and Fairwind can do to keep this before the Japanese public through Japan Times, for instance, mm-hmm. rather than just trying to affect unlistening government officials?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, Neil. What is the coverage today over there, too? Yeah. Thank you, David.
Yep.
Gosh, that's a great and very touching comment. A couple of thoughts. When I've been in Japan, which is twice in the last 3 years, I don't eat the fish. Because you just don't know where it came from. Even on the Sea of Japan side, which is the west side between Japan, Fukushima's on the Pacific, the east side, but the contamination ran into the mountain range that's between them. And even on the Sea of Japan side, we're finding high levels of cesium in the rivers that are running out of the mountain ranges. So it's pretty much everywhere in Japan. And my personal decision is, personally, I don't eat fish from the Pacific, and that's a personal choice because the government's not telling me what's in it. But for the Japanese, you have no idea where that fish is coming from. The fishermen at Fukushima take their boats down south and use that water, use those fish and sell them at different markets so that it doesn't show as a Fukushima fish. So they're trying desperately to get around the around the limits. Maggie and I wrote a book over there, which is called Fukushima Daiichi, The Truth and the Future, in Japanese. And it was number one on the Japanese Amazon.jp science section for 5 months. So, you know, the gentleman said, you can pick up the book still for sale on Amazon.jp if your relatives are interested. The other thing, though, is the Japanese have a lot of fish stew, and that's extraordinarily dangerous because they're not measuring for strontium. Strontium's called an HTD, which stands for hard to detect. So they're looking for cesium, but they're not reporting strontium. But if cesium's there, you know strontium is too. So it's in the fish bones, and when you make a fish stew, you throw the whole fish in the stew and then eat the stew. So eating fish stew in Japan from fish that are locally caught around the coast of Japan is extraordinarily unhealthy. There's a lot of questions there. I don't know if I answered them mm-hmm. all.
No, I think you did. I'm going to just go back to Vermont Yankee for a moment here. You mentioned this study that you're doing for the Lintelak Foundation, which you're going to present some findings to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. You mentioned this idea that you would recommend that sooner rather than later that the company move the fuel rods out of the pool and into dry cask storage. Now, they're supposed to do that by 2015, I read somewhere, right?
No, they've got it out of the nuclear reactor by 2015. It sits in the pool because it's physically hot until until 2019 or 2020. It has to sit for about 5 years before it's physically cool enough to be air-cooled in these casks. And everybody agrees that it should be moved after 5 years. Entergy wants it out, and the state wants it out, and I want it out. So there's no question that it reduces the risk dramatically to build up the to get the stuff from the pool onto the ground. In the meantime, though, what we're suggesting is that the emergency plan be kept in place, and Entergy doesn't want to do that. But, you know, it's about $2 million a year. Entergy's claiming it's $100 million and trying to say that they can't afford it. But really, the question is, we've got an emergency plan that could be implemented in the event there's a problem for the next 5 years. And at $2 million a year, that's a cost Vermonters should be willing to say, okay, take it from the decommissioning fund. That's a cost that to reduce the risk, to reduce the consequences if an event happens. It's a cost we're willing to take out of the emergency, out of the decommissioning fund. It seems to be a prudent use of, you know, perhaps, you know, $2 million a year for 5 years, or $10 million out of a $650 million fund.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other significant recommendations you're going to make besides moving the fuel rods and keeping the emergency plan intact?
Yeah, there's two big ones that on the finance side of this thing that affect all of us. First is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said last week, Susan Small here wrote the story on January 30th, so 2 weeks ago. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission said that Entergy is responsible for decommissioning the plant whenever it happens. And here's Entergy saying yesterday that if it gets out 60 years, they're out of there. So clearly there's an argument that needs to be argued out now between the state of Vermont, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and Entergy about where that responsibility lies. Because remember, we're the second plant to be decommissioned, and there's another 40 of these merchant plants lined up behind us. But the other thing is, and this was never thought of before, is that when they spun off Entergy, there's no longer any public oversight of how the fund is spent. Now, Entergy is giving that money to a wholly owned subsidiary called TLG Engineering. And they basically couldn't make money while the plant was running, but they're turning the decommissioning into a profit center. So they're making money by giving the decommissioning process to this company called TLG Engineering, which they own, so that the $600 million will get run through an Entergy subsidiary, and whatever profits are associated, that will flow into Entergy. So, you know, our position there is that Doug Hoffer and the and the state, perhaps the Public Service Commission, but certainly the state auditor, should have permission to audit how that money's being spent. It doesn't seem to me that the person who's responsible for the decommissioning should be making a profit on the decommissioning. But that's what the NRC has allowed to occur when it spun these plants off as LLCs.
Okay. You mentioned there were two financial issues. You dealt with both of those, right?
Yeah, I think they're both in that same category.
Let me go to Randolph Center here. Good morning, Nancy. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for having Mr. Gunderson on. My question is, my understanding is the regulations about the amount of radiation were changed by the EPA in the last several years. And I wonder how much that changed, and also does the EPA or some government agency measure radiation in this country?
Mm-hmm. Thanks. All right.
Yeah, the EPA number for strontium is 8 picocuries per liter. Just remember 8, and the well is at almost 4, so it's essentially half of what the EPA number is. Other isotopes have different limits. Like I said, tritium is 30,000, I think. So it's the limit depends on the health consequences, and so it clearly shows that the strontium is a bad actor. The issue of who monitors the radiation has been fought at in Washington for years, And inside the fence boundary, the EPA has no jurisdiction. Inside the fence boundary, it's Nuclear Regulatory Commission jurisdiction, which they defer to the licensee, to Entergy. So that the measuring the groundwater is something that the NRC expects Entergy to be doing, and there really is no other agency oversight. Now, hopefully those samples get shared with the state of Vermont. They had been when the plant was running, but I'm not sure that, you know, post-decommissioning that protocol will continue. And so the number's 8, and we're at 4 right now. My experience with these plumes is when you, the first time you pick it up, the numbers are going to go up, not down after that.
244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. We go to Burlington. Take another call. Thank you, Scott, for calling. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good, good. Go ahead.
So on a other talk show on TED yesterday, they were talking about small-scale nuclear power similar to a nuclear submarine. And they were suggesting that could be used in Burlington. And I'm wondering if that is any safer than the other kinds of nuclear power you've been talking about.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your call. Arnie?
Yeah, you know, there are these things called small modular reactors, which are similar to a reactor on a Navy sub. The comparison to a Navy sub, though, is wrong because the Navy doesn't have cost pressures. They build them for what it costs, and, you know, crew safety and operational safety are critical. So these small modular reactors have never been built commercially, and they're actually too small individually to make economic sense. So what they'll do is they'll probably put 10 small reactors running one large turbine so that it makes economic sense. And I've looked at the they're called SMRs. I've looked at these SMRs, and I can't figure out how you make any money at it, nor can Wall Street. You know, this is all being funded by the government. The issues related to it are the same. You know, we've got the same amount of radioactivity in 10 reactors that we have in Vermont Yankee and things like that. Operationally, it's really hard to get 10 horses pulling the same. So there's a lot of science and engineering that has to be done before these things become licensable, and then it's another 10 years before they ever get built. The industry says they need 70 orders in order to build a facility that makes economic sense, and right now we have none. That money's much better spent. There's a guy named Amory Lovins at Rocky Mountain Institute who clearly shows that spending money on new nukes is much less cost-effective than spending money on renewables and a grid that can handle renewables. So I think while technically it's possible, it makes no economic sense. And, 10 years from, 100 years from now, this argument is not going to be about being pro-nuke or anti-nuke. The argument is going to be about, do we want distributed power with solar collectors and windmills and other forms, or do we want these large power plants like we built in the 20th century? And I think time's changing, and the 21st century paradigm is going to be to have a distributed network of renewable energy.
But, you know, there are people that think, there are smart people that think the bridge to get to that technology is through some kind of a nuclear power, whether it's traditional or this new kind.
Yeah, I could fill an auditorium with smart people who feel the other way, too. But, yes, the pro-nuke people feel like the bridge should be nuclear. But nuclear doesn't play well with a small distributed grid. It's like when you have a large power plant on the grid, you need another large plant running but not producing electricity in case the one breaks. Whereas in a renewable grid where there's many, many small generators, you don't have that problem. So when you build nuclear and claim that you are the bridge to the future, in fact, you're making the grid less stable because you've got these large, you know, elephants out there amongst the flowers in the garden.
Let's go to Northfield. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering if you and Arnie would talk about the decommissioning fund being years ago when Governor Douglas was here. as our governor, the Congress made a bill that would make Entergy fully fund the decommissioning fund, and he vetoed it. And I was wondering if Arnie knew anything more about that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. One of the things that Ferens will be releasing in March with the Lintelax study is an interactive spreadsheet where anybody can put in the decommissioning fund numbers and the cost numbers and find out how long it takes to dismantle a plant. Right now, there's about $650 million in the fund. And to decommission Vermont Yankee, if we weren't worried about the spent fuel, to decommission Vermont Yankee is about $850. So the fund will hit $850 within 10 to 12 years. So we will be able to completely decommission Vermont Yankee by 2029. If Entergy doesn't use the fund to fund the spent fuel storage. The decommissioning fund and the decommissioning law were never meant to be used to fund the spent fuel storage, these canisters that will sit on the land for perhaps 100 years until the government takes them. There's another $400 million to keep those canisters on the ground and monitor them for as long as 100 years until the government takes them. Entergy's position is that they can take that money from the fund. And the position Fairwinds has taken and many others are that those are two separate things. What you do with the money that goes to spent fuel storage is you sue the Department of Energy. Everybody does it. And eventually they get that money back, because they always win these lawsuits. This is because Yucca Mountain is not available to store the fuel as the government committed to. So that $400 million actually should come out of Entergy, and then they sue Department of Energy, they win, they get it back. But Entergy's position has been, until just yesterday, that they were going to take that money out of the fund interest-free, and when they got it back, they'd replenish the fund. So they were going to use it as an interest-free loan. Yesterday, they changed their tune, and they said they're not going to take money out of the fund to fund spent fuel storage. If that's true, we can have Vermont Yankee, the carcass of Vermont Yankee, down to, back to the farmer's field it was, by 2029. And the interactive spreadsheet that we've developed will show that.
Of all the things we've talked about here this morning, of all the things you've written about in your report, how would you answer the following question? Your biggest worry about Vermont Yankee looking forward is what?
The next 5 years. When the fuel is in that pool, until the pool is done, the fuel is on the ground, it's not safe. And when it's moved, let's get the kids out of that school for the summer so that whatever the chance is, the consequences are so severe, it pays to get the kids out of that school.
You mentioned that this report that you did is on a website, that the one you did previously. Where was that? Joint Fiscal, did you say? Where was that?
Yeah, the JFO website has, Maggie and I produced about five different reports for the JFO on overseeing Vermont Yankee. Remember when the oversight committee looked at should Entergy be allowed to operate for another 20 years? We determined yes, it should, and that. But there were 80 areas that had to be improved, and so the Joint Fiscal Office hired Fairwinds to make sure that those 80 areas were addressed. So we wrote those reports for the JFO, and they're on the JFO website.
Thank you very much for your time this morning. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Arnie Gunderson is with Fairwind Associates. He and his wife, Maggie, run it out of Burlington, and they have been working on issues related to Vermont Yankee, as well as they've done some traveling and done some work over in Japan with that disaster at Fukushima. I want to remind you about our good friends at Green Mountain Access. If you need outstanding internet service, make it our friends at gmavt.net. You can call them toll-free today at 1-888-321-0815. You can get a lot more information about them on their website. That would be at gmavt.net. If you ever want to send me emails, you can do so at my Green Mountain Access account. You can send them to Mark, M-A-R-K, at gmavt.net. Again, give them a call today for at 1-888-321-0815 if you're looking to switch your internet service to somebody local, somebody you can count on, somebody that is right here in your backyard, keeping that money local. That's gmavt.net, 1-888-321-0815. That's going to wrap it up for hour number one. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll take your calls the rest of the way down at the legislature coming up tomorrow. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush and AM 550 WDEV, Waterbury, Montpelier.
AP Radio.